What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Colorado Show, brought to you by Colorado Free Press and Creative Destruction Media. I just realized that we don't have the logo. I like that one better. There we go.
There you go.
How are you doing today?
Hey, it's cool to be back, you know, talking about my old stomping college stomping grounds. You know, it's kind of taking me back. It's all good. Having a good day.
Very good. Well, we are we're filming this show on Good Friday because Sunday is Easter, but it will air on Easter. So happy Resurrection Day to everyone. And you know, the let the true meaning of the holiday inspire you.
Definitely.
Today. Absolutely. We have a lot to get into today. There are so many bills, and we've got an update on not all of them, certainly not all of them, but on gun bills and on all of the gender bills. We covered the gender bills early in the history of the Colorado Show, first or second episode, I think, and just the volume of them is incredible. There are 12 bills that are in varying states of the legislative process right now having to do with sex, sexuality, identity, gender, trafficking, penalties for such things. It's pretty incredible what we're seeing in terms of priorities for our General Assembly.
But it's not an information operation or anything, Ash. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, not at all. There's no top-down plan here. So I think I have, let me find this picture. An image. So on Friday, on today, or yesterday rather, because they're off today for Good Friday. But there is, and I'm struggling to find where I saved that picture. Shoot. I don't see it. Well, I had a picture of all of a lot of the legislators standing up in front of the podium, self-congratulatory posture. And it is this image in recognition of trans people, recognizing that trans people exist, I think is the premise of it. And that got me thinking back on all the gender bills that I mentioned, because we've been tracking that for a while. And, you know, like you said, not an information operation at all. The thing is that when we think about information operations, oftentimes we think about the communication side, right? We're getting these messages from the Mockingbird media. It's, you know, an information operation, but, there is a behavioral change component to these efforts. It's not just that we want to recognize that trans people exist. It's that we want to change the underlying infrastructure and all of the rules and the language and the, the same group of people that are pushing some of the most radical bills that we're going to give updates about here in a second. The same group of people is also straight up taking on the nuclear family. Straight up saying, yeah. And so it is an operation that is designed to reshape our culture. And that's 100% why, if you push back on it, if you talk about it, you're labeled a bigot.
And, you know, this is nationwide, really global. I mean, you look at, I should have sent it to you, but there's the Scottish anger monster that the Scottish police put out. So if you say the wrong thing, you know, literally, it's a big deal. And, you know, it's, you're too angry. You're an angry white person. Your whole society is being transformed, but don't be angry about it. It's hilarious.
Yeah. You're not really allowed to push back. That's what we see going on. I'm trying to find, I have the picture here. I'm just trying to figure out how I think I can share it this way. Let's see if I can share it this way. Think I can, just so the audience doesn't think I'm making things up. Let's see if this works like this. So it's not the best grin, you know, it's not the best resolution, but all very happy congratulating themselves. And this is the priority is, you know, we need to devote it seems to me that our General Assembly here devotes the majority of the time that they spend to virtue signaling and protest activities. Because if it's not gender stuff, then it's Free Palestine stuff or it's disarmament. Like, those are the big three.
Yeah, those are the biggies. I was looking for that. Keep talking. I'm going to bring this up here.
All right. Well, getting into some of these bills, there are, so these, this first batch is bills that have passed the House that are in the Senate now. HB 241080. This is youth sports personnel requirements. It's hitting Senate committee on April 11th. I don't really have a problem with this one. I there wasn't a ton of pushback. It's basically having stronger requirements of people that are engaged in coaching and, you know, any sort of sports, youth sports, and requiring that they have certain certifications. Now, I think the pushback to this was the burden that's put on small, smaller operations, more mom and pop type programs. I don't really have a problem with requiring this, of people working with kids. I think if anything, now's the time where we see it is necessary to have requirements for people.
Yeah, you got to check into who's around your kids. Definitely, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah. This is the, if you say the wrong thing, you're letting the anger monster get a hold of you. So anyway.
Wow.
I found that fascinating.
Your government is treating you like a toddler.
Exactly. And they have talking missiles over there too. You know, it's hilarious.
Wow. Wow. All right. So we've got that. So we've got the youth sports. So that's Senate committee on April 11th. 1071 is the name change to conform with gender identity bill that passed the House. It's House Bill 1071, and it hits the Senate floor on Tuesday of this week. These are all opportunities for the audience. And just so you know, caveat, the statuses of these can change at any time. And so as we know it, as you know, recording this on Friday, this is the status. By Monday, it might change. And that's why you have to check, because the idea is that, you know, we get out and the ones in committee, you'll be able to speak on. The ones on the floor, show up and show your opposition, man. Your legislators should know your name. All right. So we've got 1017, the Foster Youth Bill of Rights. This is carving out space for children to explore their identity in the trans or in the foster care system, generally trans, the identity stuff, but, non-binary and 111 billion other genders. So, you know, mazel tov. But that is that bill is second reading in the Senate. So that one's probably going to pass pretty soon. And then House Bill 1039, non-legal name changes. This is going to the Senate floor on Monday.
Wow.
Yep. That's just the first four. We then have 53, Senate Bill 2453, racial equity study includes social and health equity in the language of the bill. This is a Senate bill, will be in the House. It's House committee, passed the Senate, will be in House committee on Monday. Senate Bill 24049 is in the House. It is in the House, but this bill has been, actually, I think it might still be in the Senate, actually. This one is postponed indefinitely. It was postponed indefinitely in February. And the one thing I like to remind people is that the General Assembly loves to bring things back up and cram them through at the end. So vigilance is recommended.
Yeah, we've seen that in other states, actually. You know, the last minute changes that come through and they try to push them through. And this whole equity study thing, you mentioned that rang a bell, because in other states, we've seen that too in the school districts, where, you know, it's a perfectly good school district and they come in and they want equal outcomes instead of equal opportunity. So that's definitely a thing.
Yeah. And this is a payday to DEI consulting firms as well, because they're going to bring in somebody to do this study. And then the study is going to recommend, you know, that all sorts of changes.
Yeah.
That's how the world works. Really, this is all sustainable development goal number 5, gender equality. This is how it shows up. It shows up in your legislation. It shows up in your curriculum. It shows up on your cereal box, shows up in your programming that you're watching. It is a intentional top-down reshaping of society.
And, you know, you mentioned one other thing, you know, media accountability or legislator accountability. They still, even if Colorado is completely controlled by the wrong side, they still don't like your calls. And it still makes a difference. So people say, well, you know, they control the whole legislature. That's fine. But they still are aware of you being upset. So make it very clear to them that you're upset.
Yeah. You have to make your voice heard. You have Definitely. To advocate and tell them what you want. It's the essence of representation. Up in Weld County, the commissioner's body has decided to limit, restrict, and in some cases, depending on the topic, abolish public comment.
Of course. Yeah.
Come on, guys. At what point is enough? Are you going to stand up and be counted? So that one I mentioned that is postponed, that is I have it written down as silence voices on content of libraries. It's establishing a new committee to talk about the content of what is allowed to be. It's rule, you know, we're going to rule by committee on what literature is allowed to be put in our public libraries. Good stuff.
Yeah. Top down.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing is that the community, in my, you know, view of liberty, the community should decide such things. The idea that we need a state level committee to decide everybody's what literature is available. We're centralizing so much power and allowing the government to have its fingers in things it has no business in.
You can't allow it. That's another buzzword. You just can't accept it. I mean, you really have to just make it very clear that you don't accept this, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
We're not going to take this.
Agreed. So then there's a House Bill 24-1170. This is rights for the youth division of youth services facilities will be in the Senate on the Senate side here, first hearing in committee on April 11th. There are three that I have here that are still in the House. This is, again, all kind of the focusing on kids and exploring gender and, you know, protecting rights when it comes to these. Yeah, I describe this as weaponized empathy because it is, you know, the idea is that this small minority segment of society is persecuted, is made invisible, is denied certain rights in a society, within our society, within our communities. And so we have to enshrine in law the protections. And with the trans stuff, it gets a little bit more sinister, I think, when it comes to the kids. But in general,
yeah,
right, that's the idea of protected classes of people. And what happens is that you then create a society that sees itself as victims, and we're looking for oppression everywhere.
And we're looking for somebody to make it right for us, which happens to be the government.
Well, yeah, but it's always the government.
Yeah,
it's always this group is persecuted, so the government needs to step in and stop this group from being persecuted. Persecution doesn't end because basically what they're calling persecution is bigotry, and bigotry is a part of the human experience. And
childhood.
We should, Well, we should, you know, seek to create a more respectful and just society, but you can't do that by wielding the power of the state against people that disagree with you. All you're going to do is create rebellion.
Well, there's also, I mean, let's be honest. Let's look at this with clear eyes. There's a fertility part to all this. You got the vaccines, which are going against fertility. You got abortion. You got the trans movement. You got LGBT. What's the common denominator? It's reproduction. Mm-hmm. I mean, in my opinion, it's very obvious what they're trying to do.
Global population reduction.
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah. And the other part is societal or demographic change. I mean, this is targeted against certain groups. So it's very obvious.
Yeah. All right. So we've got one of my favorite buzzwords is restorative justice, which means prioritizing criminals over mm-hmm. their victims. This is 24-1101 House bill. It's still in the House. It'll be heard in committee on Tuesday. So if you want to, speak up about restorative justice, now's your chance. Empower victims through accessing restorative justice. What that means is victims that are in the criminal justice system, right? Yeah. And this came up when they killed a bill earlier in the session that sought to create mandatory minimums on pedophiles. Mm-hmm. And the one of the reasons given for striking that down was, well, you know, the I don't remember what word they've so screwed up the language, like it's hard to get a sentence out, but basically pedophiles can be hurt people too. And so we need to view them through the lens of, you know, restorative justice. I don't believe that pedophiles can be rehabilitated. I think that that's a
historically that doesn't you know, jive. I mean, it doesn't work.
I don't think we see evidence of it for sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's 1101 Senate, House Committee on Tuesday. Gender affirming healthcare provider study. Another gift to the consulting firms that's going to lead to some dystopian future. And it's healthcare related.
It's all healthcare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's House Bill 1040.
Yeah.
That's also in committee on Tuesday. And then House Bill 241025, implement fertility coverage for health plans. This bill is in appropriations right now. And so that I'm sure that will pass.
Hmm.
I would bet, right? I don't bet, but I would bet on that one. There's no way that doesn't pass.
It's a lot of money wrapped up into that.
Yeah. A lot of money, a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. One of the best political messages that you can have going into campaign season. We're fighting for reproductive freedom, reproductive. Mm-hmm. Colorado is the state where we're going to allow the most babies to be murdered. Like that is the campaign message for the left. And the left controls all the levers of power here. There are two bills that are ready for the governor. HB 24, 1072. This is the Protection of Victims of Sexual Offenses bill. It has passed through the House, through the Senate, and is waiting for the governor to sign it. I don't believe it's been signed yet. Same for Senate Bill 24-035. This is actually it's a good bill. It's a good, solid bipartisan bill. The radical lefties voted against it. But it passed both chambers, strengthening the enforcement of human trafficking. That one passed. It's a good, but we don't usually see good bills in Colorado. So it's surprising when it happens.
So what do you think is what's behind that? I mean, what's the agenda? Is it what it seems to be, or is there something else swirling around behind it? Do you know?
Well, it was so when I was having this conversation with friends of mine that are down at the Capitol that, you know, watched this process go through, there was a weird air about it. Yeah. This was truly a bipartisan effort. It was, I'm not going to be super specific, but there were some horse trading that had to be done to get it passed, which, was kind of punitive type stuff in the background.
Interesting.
But, at the end of the day, strengthening the enforcement of human trafficking is a good thing.
Yeah, so. Sure. I'm just curious. Yeah.
Two other bills we have that we're tracking this week. Assault weapons ban is expected to hit for the second reading on Monday. So
and what do they call an assault weapon? Anything that looks scary?
This is pretty sinister, actually. Yeah. They've broken it down by the component parts. Mm-hmm. So this applies to handguns, it applies to long guns, there's a lot of different So last session's assault weapons bill was intended to break down into the component parts, each part of the firearm, and place regulations on every single aspect of it. What that leads to, particularly given how many guns we already have in the ecosystem, is everybody's guilty of a gun crime.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the goal of what they're trying to do. But they've been for several sessions now, they've been trying to do this.
So
and Taylor Rhodes and the guys at Rocky Mountain Gun Owners are great at tracking this and letting everybody know with the calls to action. So make sure you're signed up to follow those guys. Cool. Taylor will be on the show next week.
Awesome. So is this like grandfathered, or does it mean new production, or were they going to go after, are they going to do gun seizures or what?
Well, as we talked about last week, one of their gun bills is to create the capability to enforce all their gun legislation under Colorado Bureau of Investigation.
I see. Okay.
So they haven't said how they're going to enforce it, but it doesn't take too many steps to get there in my head.
Right.
And then the last is the firearms merchant category. This has passed through the House and is in the Senate. The second reading will be Tuesday. So that is the, when you use a credit card, there's going to be a new category. They tried to do this at the federal level, weren't able to get it done. So now they're doing it at the state level. The merchant category code mm-hmm. is a part of the back end of credit card systems and how that whole system works. And they're creating a new one for anything. And it's not just for guns. It's like ammo and protective gear. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe range services, gun membership, whatever. But it's a list.
Yeah.
They're just creating a list, a registry, a database, if you will.
Right. Yeah. To go after. Sure.
Yeah. So, and it's probably going to pass and then they'll get sued and it'll go up to the Supreme Court and probably get overturned. But
they get the list in the meantime, maybe, or unless there's an injunction put on.
Unless there's an injunction. Yeah. Right.
Huh.
It's going to be interesting. All right. So moving over into another topic, as we know, Ken Buck resigned. Ken Buck is my congressman here in Congressional District 4. And over the weekend, Greg Lopez was Greg Lopez was selected to replace Ken Buck. So congratulations to Greg Lopez. I actually have can read a little bit of this here. Greg Lopez ran for governor twice. And he was unsuccessful, obviously, because there's no Governor Lopez. But he's a good guy. I've met him a couple times. I worked with him on one specific project. He was at the Capitol in December of 2020, protesting the election fraud. He has never shied away from talking about it. He didn't make it as much of a campaign issue as I would have liked him to, you know, in 2022, but he has been outspoken on election fraud. And the thing is, he's not running in November. So he's here for 6 months. And it closes that open seat that was left in the House majority in D.C. So we'll have somebody voting.
Interesting.
I see no evidence that he's bought and paid for by anybody. So hopefully he'll vote with America First. Based on what I know of him, I would expect him to vote with America First.
Well, so we should track that and watch.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Well, again, it's my congressman, right? So of course, yeah. Former mayor picked as GOP nominee to replace Ken Buck. Former Parker, Colorado mayor Greg Lopez was selected as the Republican nominee on the June 25th special election ballot. He will be on the special election ballot to fill the rest of Buck's term. Lopez, I'm mistaken because I thought it was done. Apparently, it's not done. Lopez
election.
Yeah, it's going to be. Okay, that makes more sense because we did cover that it was going to be a special election. So this is the party stuff. So anyway, vote for Greg. The other people that are on this ballot, I believe, are people that are also running in November. I think that changes the math of how they spend their time in the House between now and November. He doesn't appear to be running. And I think that having somebody go to DC to represent the interests of the people that send them, even if it's just for 6 months, I think could have a profound impact.
Well, yeah, especially if he's not bought. So it's June 25, mm-hmm. I see in the article there. So mm-hmm. is Boebert running for this seat? Is that what's going
Boebert,
on?
So Boebert can't run in the special. She's running for the seat in November, but she already has a seat. Right. So she'd have to abandon CD3 to run for this special election for the 6 months. And there was people were arguing that Ken Buck was doing this to hurt Lauren Boebert.
Yeah.
That he that you know, didn't want her to be able to. Yeah, that was the narrative.
Yeah.
It's a stretch for me, to be honest.
But this guy's not going to, because the whole thing was that, you know, he pulled out so there'd be a special election. So she'd have to run in the special election and resign her other seat or whatever. And that, if he's not going to run in November, then it really doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, so exactly. And it gets, and it fills the, and then we're not having, you know, okay, she, yeah, it's super complicated this year. And let me put it this way. Of all of the candidates that I see that are running in November to be my congressman, and Greg Lopez is not one of them, Greg Lopez is the one that I would most want to be my congressman out of the people that we've been shown. So that's what I have to say about that. A couple last points on this. One thing that I think is really interesting is that this is Thursday night. He's chosen to, you know, this is the CD4 caucus, essentially. And he's chosen to be put on the ballot getting 51 votes while Sonnenberg got 46 votes. And it's like, okay, so 97 people are determining who our candidates are.
Wow.
When you think about the fact that CD4 has over 900,000 voters, not people, voters, and then 90 people, like, we've got to fix this process. There has to be more people getting, like, if the two parties are going to be the thing, it needs to be taken seriously, because with 97 people making a decision for 900,000 voters, I think if more people were involved, well,
how's the Republican representation in Colorado in the local precincts? Because I know that Dan Schultz down in Arizona has been pushing Precinct Project pretty hard, and he's extremely frustrated. I know, because I interviewed him the other day, that, you know, there's still 50% open seats. Is that the way it's in Colorado? Do you know? Or,
oh, I think it's probably more. We had so Colorado was doing the Precinct Project, like, mm-hmm. before it was cool. Dan has been doing this forever. So I'm not saying before Dan was doing it, but before it, was picked up in post 2020, our Republican Party elders, kind of grassroots elders who have been fighting for change in the Republican Party for a while, told us right at, you know, after January 6th happened, people were like, I don't know what to do. We were marching before then, right? So then it was like, I don't know what to do. And I remember Peg Cage, former head of the Teller Committee, she was saying, she was coming to, like, all of the lunch meetups and everything and saying, you've got to get involved in the party. And I'm, of course, like, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, that's a non-starter for me, but she was very successful in getting a lot of people, particularly in El Paso County, but other places as well, to take those spots. Mm-hmm. And they made real change. Mm-hmm. El Paso County has the most America First Republican Party that I've seen in the state since I've lived here since 2012. It's very refreshing to see. And it happened as a result of the precinct strategy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it started in January of 2021 here in Colorado. It took cycles to make, you know, to make it what it is today. You're not going to vote for somebody and the problems are going to go away. You have to be a part of the change.
Definitely.
So just this last quote, I just wanted to do this quote of Greg. I'm not looking at this. I love this line. This is the line. I'm not looking to run for office. I'm looking to only fulfill the last 6 months of this term. Tonight, it's not about giving an individual advantage over their competition. It is to go represent the people of CD4 for 6 months. The people of CD4 haven't had adequate representation in a long time. So
that's been obvious.
That's good stuff. Yeah. So congratulations to Greg. And then I wanted to check in with Rebecca. So last week we had Rebecca on the show, Rebecca Lavrenz. She is in DC this week for her trial, which started on Monday. No trial today because it's Good Friday, and we have a Good Friday message.
Today, one of my daughters told me, Mom, it's Good Friday. And I said, oh, that's right. It's good. And today is the day that I get to take the witness stand at my trial here in Washington, D.C. to defend the country that I love, the one I came here over 3 years ago to defend. Thank you so much for standing with me and your love for God and our country. Thank you.
I guess they are in business today. There's no Colorado session today, but I guess the federal courts are working.
Interesting. Well, keep us up to date on how that goes. Definitely want to see how.
Yeah. Well, so it's day four of the trial, and or yesterday was day four of the trial, and she's released some new evidence. So she talked about this on the show last week. Just one sec. I've got to find where I have her tweet here. I had it up, but it's not up anymore. So give me one hold for processing one moment. But so she mentioned this when we had her on last week, and it's now public information, and we have a video clip And we can show, here we go. It's right here we go. All right. So new release, three plainclothes FBI agents were at the exact spot I was moments before on January 6th. One clapping, government is refusing to provide the unredacted 302 report, electronic recordings, or identities of the two FBI agents. So let me pull in this video so we can see it properly. And then you can see over on the right-hand side of this, the 302, which has all of the information. Now, this, I think, is interesting because we've heard with the, there was the J6 committee report, and then Stephen Sund came out and talked about his experience as the head of the Capitol Police on January 6th. There has been other disclosures about there being undercover officers, plainclothes officers, who, you know, what agency, that's all, you know, stuff we're not allowed to know, national security or whatever, but it's, this is, and this is entering her trial, which, you know, means it's on the record. And I think we can have renewed calls for how many undercover operatives were there that day? How many of the people involved in violence and whatnot were, you know.
Well, you know, we've done some reporting. There were Ukrainians there too, speaking, you know, foreign languages in the building coming up. And then there's a whole big op going on this whole thing. So it's much different and bigger than most Americans realize.
Yeah, agreed. It's kind of crazy when you look at the magnitude of it. And I fully believe that November 3rd was a coup and January 6th was a cover up of that coup, and the January 6th committee was a cover up of the cover up. And I think that's where the evidence takes us.
So what is she going to say? Is she going to say that there were operatives in the crowd where she was? So how can she be a criminal, kind of thing?
I don't know how it plays into her defense strategy. Mm-hmm. I do know I've read the, we had all the FBI reports and stuff when she turned herself in. So I've read all of that document, like the indictment and all of that kind of stuff. They have her on walking. It's like picketing and trespassing, right? Like it's, she went in through an open door that had a guard stationed at it. She wasn't insurrecting. She wasn't breaking and entering. She walked into an open door, stayed within the ropes, was inside for 8 minutes. They have every bit of her inside on camera.
Mm-hmm.
They have her talking to a Capitol Police officer and then she exits peacefully. And it took them over 2 years to come get her. And, you know, she turned herself in and everything. And she's that's the thing is like 2 years later, it's like a trespassing and picketing charge. This is just persecution. There's no other
reason.
Yeah. There's no legitimate explanation for that. All right. So we are going to shift gears and talk about sugary drinks. But before we do, let's hear from a few of our sponsors. If I can find them.
It's going to be a good day. Morning, baby. Shipping beef this Monday. We do have a little bit left available here. Check us out, familyfarmbeefbox.com. Thanks. Have a good day.
To celebrate the new year, we're having the biggest sale ever on overstock clearance and brand new products. For example, save 60% on our Goose Down Comforters, the best comforters ever. They go perfectly with our MyPillow bed sheets and duvet covers. Save 25% on our brand new kitchen towels. They're made with the same technology as our famous My Towels. Our initial quantities are extremely low, so get them now before they go. Our seasonal flannel sheets are finally in. You save up to 50% and they sell out fast every year, so order now. They're truly the best flannel sheets you'll ever sleep on. Or save up to 80% on all our clearance items. And this is where it gets even better. For a limited time, your entire order ships absolutely free. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use that promo code to get deep discounts on all MyPillow products. And for a limited time, your order ships absolutely free.
Psst. Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stalk them before they block them.
I love that last
one. Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one. All right. So this made some headlines this past week. Not the, obviously the bridge made headlines. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about sugary drinks. The Denver City Council on Tuesday moved to prohibit restaurants within the city limits from including sugary drinks on children's menus, arguing it would help counter America's obesity epidemic. The measure defines default beverage in a children's meal to mean two things: water, which may be still or sparkling with no added sugar, or dairy milk, or non-dairy milk substitute with no added sugar. In pushing for the measure, District 10 Councilman Chris Hines pointed to other cities in the Denver area, as well as in the country, that have adopted similar measures. We have an obesity epidemic. We have a diabetes epidemic. So let's set our kids up for success. Let's make sure they can focus on learning instead of being worried about health complications so early in their lives. He describes pushing back against arguments that the move infringes upon people's personal rights, describing it as a nudge resolution, referring to the plastic bag ban that he also said nudges people to bring their own bags or else pay a small fee. At large, Councilwoman Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez co-sponsored the bill. I love the comparison to the bags, because the bags has been a disaster. And it's not a nudge. They banned them. They banned plastic bags here.
This is nationwide. You know, in other jurisdictions, we're seeing bans on leaf blowers. I had one city who just told me that if you cut down more than one tree on your property a year, you'll be fined. If you break a limb off a bush, you're going to be fined. So, I mean, it's all about control, right? I mean, and these people don't care about your health or care about the kids. If they did,
or the environment, they'd stop all the seed
oils and all that processed food that's making everybody obese and all the drug pushing by the doctors. So, it's all about the revolution. It's and power.
Yeah, I think that's right. I love the one of my favorite environmental fails is the plastic bags, because plastic bags, if you will recall, were brought in to save the trees. Mm-hmm. People were using paper bags, which are a renewable resource. We can grow more trees. Paper's recyclable. It's pretty sustainable situation we have going on there with the bags. But there was, some sort of lobby that in the name of the environment, because we need to save the trees, we brought about single-use plastics. And now we're told that single-use plastics are the greatest environmental threat that we see in Colorado. They're showing up everywhere in our lakes and rivers and all this kind of stuff. And so they're replacing them with paper bags, but, they're 10 cents. Like, you could have just saved us 20 years of pain and, pollution and petroleum products and all of the things, and just charge us 10 cents to begin with.
Yeah, no kidding. Or make them biodegradable or whatever. I mean, a lot of ways to spend that.
So I don't really have a super strong opinion on what you put. I don't think the government should mandate what you can put on a kid's menu, first of all.
Yeah.
I think the government is in Colorado is a big old nanny. But at the same time, you mentioned, seed oils and all these other things, the sugar that's involved in a lot of the drinks that are fed to our kids, but not just the sugar, right? The dyes and the preservatives and all of the things. A lot of our food is poison. So I wanted to ask, because I have, I go back and forth on this topic of what's the proper role of government in this? And, I think there's something to be said for banning poison.
I don't disagree, but we got to be straight up and honest about it, because there's a lot of other poisons out there you know, and I think it's all about education. Look at the federal food pyramid. I mean, it's exactly opposite of what it should be. I mean, beef and eggs are fantastic for you. The whole cholesterol thing has been shown to be overblown. And, you know, it's all about big ag and supporting their industry, you know, and I used to not say that as a free market guy, but I just think that government should, we should be honest as to what is being put, what the reason is for pushing certain bills and others not being pushed.
Well, yeah. And like we all endeavors have limited resources. Where are we going to apply our resources to, you know, most affect the outcome that we want to see? And I think looking at what they're doing with that lens is a great way to look at everything that your government is doing, right? Is what's the change outcome we're driving towards? And what are the, is this allocation of resources going to move the needle on it? I don't think that going after children's drink menus is going to move the needle on the
obesity. How about going after the vaccine makers, which just killed a few million or multiple millions of people? That might help the kids.
Yeah.
But
even on obesity, right? Mm-hmm. Going after the food production corporations that are creating the poison would probably help the epidemic.
How about putting that money?
But those guys donate to their campaigns. So
exactly. That's you hit it on the head. That's what it is. It's all a special. How about putting that money towards a campaign to make people aware of the dangers of seed oils? How about that?
That would
save a lot of kids' obesity right there.
Yeah, and it would make a whole lot of lobbyists mad, which is why it doesn't happen.
And then you have Oregon. They're literally using satellite data, going after small farms. And if you have a small farm, they're tracking you as to how you sell your food, and then they're going to shut you down based on a water permit.
Yep.
So, I mean, that goes against food security and food, you know, protection and safety and obesity and all that. Small farms are the answer, right?
Yep. Yeah, but the government has made, you know, small farmers pretty much obsolete.
Exactly.
Because they've enabled the destruction, but now they're going to fix it.
So it's not about health. It's about the revolution and maintaining power and the encroachment of power into every facet of your life.
Great segue for our final topic.
And I've got to run here shortly. But,
okay. One of my absolute favorite topics, just get your initial reaction to this and then I'll let you go, is AI. And this is out of Colorado Free Press. Mm-hmm. Everybody be sure you're following Colorado Free Press at coloradofreepress.com and on all the socials and Rumbles and all of that great new CD media endeavor that is seeking to tell the truth in Colorado.
So what do I think about this?
Well, yeah, let me read a little bit of the story and then I'll get your take. I know you got to go. So give me 2 minutes on it.
Yep.
How the deep state is using artificial intelligence to brainwash children, control elections, and surveil the world. AI, programmed by raging totalitarians, is being used by the deep state to indoctrinate children by replacing human teachers, explains the New American Magazine's Alex Newman in this episode of Behind the Deep. I will put the links to what we covered today in the comment section of the chat, but I guess what is your take on this massive AI push that we're having right now?
I think it is a technology. It's essentially just a huge search engine, right? It's a very sophisticated search engine. It's not intelligent, at least not yet. And I think we need to, as freedom lovers, to fight back by building our own, which I know several people who are building their own large language models for legal issues, for, you know, FOIA requests, for we need to use this technology for our benefit. So again, unplug from the matrix. Don't go to ChatGPT. You know, there's others out there. Gab has one. There's others. Find one that is not going to be biased and tell your kids that, you know, the founding fathers were black and all this kind of stuff. So,
Well, that's the thing is that it's not just a search engine, right? Because Google Gemini wasn't just searching and finding stuff. It was creating an alternate reality.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So my take on AI is, I have, you know, some experience with people who work in this space and are very, very familiar with the tech. I think that there's great promise in it. And I think that we have an opportunity to do some really great things. I also think that it will be weaponized
Of course it will. It already is. Yeah.
But the biggest power, in my opinion, is the narrative. We see a convergence of AI and nuclear narratives all the time, and it's meant to instill fear. It is meant to instill fear of the state. And by the state in this regard, I mean the AI research community. So the WEF state, right? The global network. It is fear us. We have the power to destroy you. It's the exact same message that the outcomes of the Manhattan Project and the nuclear generations went through, and it was fear us. We have the power.
I remember it well.
You. Yeah. Right. I think they're reviving it. I think that's why we got Oppenheimer, right? That's why we got renewed visuals, this big epic visual of how horrific it will be if Putin drops nukes, right?
So I got to go, but I'll just say that we don't have any AI at CDM. We have the only human reporters, and we'll keep it that way. So I'll make that promise to you. If we find a writer using AI, we'll get rid of them. And I think you need to unplug from this entire matrix and plug into new media. And these people are collapsing. So don't give them your dollars, your eyeballs, your ad space. If you watch them, they're making money off you, even if you don't realize it. So go somewhere else like CDM. We're the new wire service, and we are growing. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Todd, for joining me. And I'll close this out. I know you got to run. Everybody, that's our show today, and we'll see you next Sunday. We will have Taylor Rhodes on the show, and should be a good discussion about all the gun bills. Hopefully, we won't have a new assault weapons ban by then, but maybe we'll see what happens this week. Stay vigilant, stay focused on what's happening in the Capitol, and we'll see you next week. Take care.